Okay, The Encrypted Art of James Sanborn. James Sanborn is the artist who created the crypto sculpture at CIA headquarters. How many people here have been to my cryptos talk? All right, so most people, yeah. Okay, so I won't go into a lot of detail about what cryptos is, but basically it's a sculpture at the center of CIA headquarters. Was installed in 1990 as a challenge to the employees of the CIA. You got the recording going? Okay. And it was never intended as a public challenge. It was just intended as a challenge to the employees there. And I'll show you some other challenges that he's done for other government agencies. And there's four codes on it. Three of the four have been solved. The fourth has not been solved yet. It's one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world. So Cryptos was not created in a vacuum. Cryptos is part of a theme of Sanborn's career. So one of the things I'm going to be doing in this talk is showing the different themes and how several of these themes were represented in the Cryptos sculptures. And I'm hoping that by looking at the themes of Sanborn's work and seeing what he repeats, because he does tend to repeat a lot from one piece to the next, that we might be able to learn more about Cryptos and perhaps use this as a method of solving part four. I'm also be talking about some of his upcoming projects as well. So this is Jim Sanborn. This is a picture. He's standing next to what we call the covert operations fragments. When he created Cryptos, he noticed as he was getting tours of the CIA that they shredded a lot of documents at the end of the day. And these documents are not just shredded, but they're shredded and then they mix them with a chemical to even further deteriorate the paper. And when they did this, they end up with this sort of a popcorn-like material, sort of like styrofoam peanuts. I'm getting some feedback here, Justine. Yeah. Scott? Yeah, okay. Are you guys having trouble hearing me a little bit? Okay. All right, so he ended up with this sort of a peanut-like material, and he did some tests on it, and he discovered that if he took this material and then he mixed it with other chemicals, and he basically had these huge mounds of it, and he would kind of rake it and spray it with a chemical and rake it, and he could make a plaster kind of material, sort of a clay kind of material. And so he made these walls that you're seeing standing there, and he also made several smaller fragments, and then he would stamp encrypted text into these pulp sculptures that he was making. And we've been trying to track down all of these because he made a lot of them. So this is one, and so there's text. It's very difficult to see in this picture, but I'll be showing you other pictures. He did not originally set out to be an artist. He traveled a lot. He was studying archaeology, and he studied a lot about geologic forces, and he was also studying, I believe, architecture at one point. And then at one point he was building like a maquette, a model of something, and he discovered that he liked that process more than what he was building the maquette for. And so that's when he kind of switched over to art and became an artist. There was no major list of all of his works until I started collecting information in 2003. I've been trying to track down everything he's ever done. And so I've been writing to every gallery where he's ever done an exhibition, requesting catalogs over into the Smithsonian. And I have a lot of data, but there's still pieces I haven't tracked down because many were sold to private collectors. Sometimes if I can find the private collector, I call them up and I say, "Hi, I'm Ilanka, can I come over? Can I come into your home or into your sculpture garden and take pictures of things in the garden?" Sometimes they say yes. Sometimes they just kind of look at me oddly. and there's several pieces I really want to see, but I'll be going into that. Another thing to understand about Sanborn is that he sees his work in two different, very different sections. One is the public art section, one is the gallery art section. And as the kind of artist he is, he believes that the gallery art, that's the status art. That's where you have the art gallery, you know, where they invite people and they drink wine and they walk around the building and they look at the things that are hanging on the walls. Then there's the public art. That's the large pieces that are sitting out in front of buildings, sitting in parks. And he sees the public art as sort of a lower class kind of art. Artists like him will do the public art as a way of earning money in order to be able to finance the gallery art that they want to do. So he sees Cryptos as part of the public art. He just did it as a project, a way to increase his visibility, and he's done other of these public art pieces in several areas around the United States, especially the Washington, D.C. area, because that's where he's from, and there's some pieces in other countries as well. Or at least there was one in Taiwan. We don't know if it's still there because there was like a typhoon that went through. And the public art also, so he sees cryptos as kind of this, again, this kind of lower class art. And the reason that these buildings would sometimes request art is they often get, when someone, an architect, is creating a building, and they're working through all the things about getting the rights to use the land and what the taxes are going to be, many areas have zoning where they will charge lower taxes to a building if the building has art, because then it's adding more to the neighborhood. And so these people that are putting up buildings are saying, okay, we need art. We don't care what the art is. We just want art, and that way we're going to have lower taxes. So they put out the bid to the art community, and the art community will come in. And so that's why you'll go through and you'll see this something that's just like a huge aluminum pillar somewhere. Means nothing, but it's art. And so that's why they did it. That's why you have sometimes these very odd things that don't seem to mean anything. It was just a way of getting lower taxes or getting the permits for the zone in that particular area. So I'll be going in more detail over these during the talk, but when Sanborn started, he worked a lot with aluminum, and he also worked a lot with sandstone. And so you'll see several sandstone pieces, and sandstone was sort of a theme that's continuing to go throughout his career. You'll keep seeing these large sandstone and granite blocks. He loves working with geologic forces, and the crypto sculpture, and I'll be showing more pictures of that, definitely reflects that. And he loves dealing with magnetism or anything to do with invisible forces and trying to make invisible forces visible. So he'll have areas where he's got like a needle hanging from a ceiling, and there's several needles, and they're all kind of pointing in the same direction because there's a lodestone at the far end of the room. And then after this, and then he did cryptos, and cryptos was really a turning point for Sanborn, where he suddenly started dealing with encrypted messages. He'd never dealt with encrypted messages before cryptos. He'd never done anything with text before cryptos. And then suddenly after cryptos, he started doing a whole bunch of stuff with encryption, a whole bunch of things with text messages. And then he went through a few years where he was doing projected light. He'd go out into the desert and he'd beam light at mountains, and then he'd take these long time-lapse photographs of what was out there. And now he's dealing with another invisible force, which is radioactivity. And he's actually building a particle accelerator, a working particle accelerator in his backyard near Washington, D.C. I mean, he has to sit behind a lead shield when he turns the thing on. And the people in Washington know about this. There's been an article in the Washington Post. And he's planning on showing his current piece, which he's been working on for a few years now. He's planning on showing it in Denver at the Denver Biennial next summer. So this is the picture of the earliest piece of Sanborn art that I have from 1974. So it's not particularly earth-shattering, but it is the earliest piece I have, a crisscross. And if you see these triangles, you'll see this pattern repeated in others of the sculptures. So a couple years later, he did this thing called Elk Delta, which is in Charleston. And again, you see these triangles. And he's playing with different patterns. There's also the grid along the top, and he likes to play with the idea of light coming down through these grids. And then, so that was public art. And now around the same time, this is some of his gallery art. His gallery art, now he's working here with sandstone, and this jagged thing coming down is lightning. And you'll see lightning as a recurring theme going through many of his pieces now. This was another piece, again, working with sandstone. And he likes this idea of valleys and filling valleys, or mountains, valleys in between mountains. Dozens of pieces like this. Going on a little bit, so again, we have lightning. You see the lightning, which is light. We're seeing shadows here. So light is coming through, and then there's a lodestone down at the very bottom there, which is where this light of lightning is at, seems to be touching the lodestone there. And again, we have the sandstone in the back, and again, this bolt of lightning. And you can see here a series of needles, and we're actually seeing the shadows of the needles as well, and each one is pointing at an individual lodestone. And so he loves dealing with magnetism and lodestones. Here's another one where, again, you see all these needles, and all of them are all pointing at different lodestones. And this is gallery art that he's doing. More needles. And then, so now we're going back to public art. There was a subway station, a train station. This is the Cold Spring Station. It's at Wabash and Cold Spring. And he did some things here. So he's going back to geologic forces now. And this pattern, this jagged pattern here, we're going to be seeing this in other pieces. For example, he did this, and again, he did this with the jagged pattern, and it looks very similar to the Wabash outcrop piece. This was done for a private collector. I think this is one of the executives from the Hanes Underwear Corporation that wanted some art out on their lawn, and so Sanborn created that for them. Then, so now we're getting closer We haven't quite gotten to the point when he got the Kryptos Commission. He got the Kryptos Commission in 1988. And to my knowledge, there were two public art pieces that he was doing right before that. This is 1985. This is Artery Plaza, and there's several pieces there. He called it Hidden Under the Three Events. And so this column here, it's a triangular column with different emblems on different sides. So again, we see we have the lightning here. This is, by the way, Gary Warzen, the late Gary Warzen, who was the co-founder of the Kryptos discussion group with me. He and I went out and we were doing some Sanborn field trips in D.C., and then he passed away very suddenly about a year later. So Sanborn, again, see that we have this jagged pattern of the stone, and then this nautilus shell. This nautilus shell is also going to be repeating in various parts of Sanborn's art. And then this is the third side of the column, and I think I need to ask Sanborn when he says hidden under the three events. So we have lightning, and then we have the nautilus shell, so I think that's representing ocean. And I'm not sure exactly what this side is supposed to represent. So this is another part of Artery Plaza. So we have this tower here, and then we have here, and here it's important because we have, again, we have a, I think it's granite here, and there's a compass rose that's carved here, which is, those of you that know Kryptos know that there's a compass rose out at CIA headquarters. There's actually three sculptures of Sanborn's that have compass roses. This is the first one, to my knowledge, that he did, though I believe it ties into his magnetism phase, where he's interested in needles that are free-floating, and here he's actually carving a compass rose. Though the compass rose here, the needle on the compass rose is not pointing towards north. And what he's meaning to do here is he sort of did it as a fun thing, that the compass rose is actually pointing to a lodestone over here that's hidden in the greenery over on this side of Artery Plaza. And so that's kind of a fun thing. This is the next piece that he did right before Kryptos. This is called Invisible Forces. This is in Arlington, Virginia. So again, we have this tower. Again, we have this tower, and again, we have the lightning bolt coming down the tower. We have a large lodestone here, and here's the other compass rose. It's over here carved on the red granite. Chris Hansen, another co-moderator of the Kryptos group, went out and took a look, and so he actually, you know, placed a compass nearby, and then he was doing some overlaying to show where true north is and where that compass seemed to be pointing. I'm pretty sure that it's pointing over towards the lodestone that we saw here, over this lodestone. Right. And then there's Kryptos. All of a sudden, he's doing something with text. He got the commission because the CIA had their original headquarters building, and they had commissioned a new headquarters building, and they wanted art to go around the building. I don't know if it was for zoning or if it's just they wanted art. And so they put out the request for art in art newsletters around Washington, D.C., saying, we're looking for something to kind of enhance the environment around the new headquarters building. And Sanborn, along with several others, submitted a bid, and I actually went into the GSA, the General Services Administration, where I got to see all this paperwork. It's huge bureaucracy, huge, where they have to say, okay, we're going to have art, so let's form a committee to choose the people that are going to be on the committee to choose the art. And then they would have to send letters to people to be on the committee to choose the people to be on the committee, and then each letter had to be sent and returned, and it was just huge amounts of paperwork. But they went through the various bids, and then they chose Sanborn because he'd done some of these other public art pieces around D.C. He was connected. His father worked at the Library of Congress, and I think he put in a good price bid. And so they hired him to do it, and then after he got the bid, then he started reading up more on the CIA and deciding what it was, what kind of art he wanted to do. And again, he's doing something completely different than what he'd done before. He's not doing these lightning and magnetism things. Instead, he decided to do something with hidden messages. And that's why he decided to do Kryptos. And he told this idea to William Webster, who was the director of the CIA. And Webster liked the idea and put Sanborn in touch with Ed Scheidt. Ed Scheidt was the director of the CIA Cryptographic Center at the time and was getting in the process of, was about to resign. Retire. And so Scheidt spent a couple months teaching Sanborn about cryptography, and then Sanborn, when he went into the Southwest at one point to pick up this petrified log over here, and then on the way with the truck as he's bringing the log back to Washington, D.C., that's when he came up with the idea for the message and was actually doing the encryption while he was on this road trip. So again, we have stone here, we have the petrified tree, and we have this pool, which you can't really see here, but it's kind of pushing things in a counterclockwise direction. So we have a kind of a vortex, which also ties into some of the Coriolis effect things that Sanborn had been doing. Okay, I told you that. Okay. And this is Kryptos, four codes, three of the four solved, fourth not solved. That's the fourth part, but I won't be going into details about that on this talk. So I found out that after Sanborn made Kryptos, he made another piece. So again, this, we're going back to gallery art, and he called it the Untitled Kryptos piece. And he sold this to a private collector named Gilbert Kinney. And then Gilbert Kinney kept it on his balcony for a while, and then Mr. Kinney, donated it to the Hirshhorn Museum. And then another museum, the Neuberger Museum, saw this piece and said, oh, we'd love to have a piece like that for this new exhibition that we're doing over here, but we need something a bit larger. And they went to Sanborn and said, can you make that piece, but 20% larger? And here's money. And Sanborn said, okay. And so he made this larger piece. So here's the smaller piece. And here's the larger piece. So you can see the main difference. The text is identical between the two. The petrified log in between them is slightly different. It's one way to tell the difference between the two. And so then after the Neuberger Museum was done with the larger piece, then Sanborn worked something out where the larger piece got installed at the Hirshhorn, which is where it is now. And Sanborn got to keep the smaller piece and take it home and then offer it again for sale. And he offered again for sale, and that's when it was purchased by David Bonnet, who's a dot-com millionaire. He's in Los Angeles, California. He's the guy that founded GeoCities, and he loves cryptography. So he purchased this piece. He also has an Enigma machine in his living room, so he has a lot of interesting code stuff. And I called him up, and I told him, hey, can I come in and take pictures? And he said, sure. So I was able to go and visit his home. So going into a little bit about what the makeup of the two pieces, the untitled piece and the one at Hirshhorn is currently called Antipodes. At one point it was also called Covert Balance, because on one side of the untitled Kryptos piece is the text from Kryptos, the text from the CIA sculpture. On the other side of it, sorry, this is too sensitive today. On the other side of it here, this is all Russian text. It's encrypted Cyrillic text. And the Cyrillic text is also replicated on another one of Sanborn's sculptures. There are also some differences between the two. So on Kryptos, where you have the parts that go 1, 2, 3, 4, on the untitled Kryptos piece, they starts with section 3. And it goes 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, and then it kind of chops off halfway through. Don't know why. That's just the way that he chose to do it. Also on Kryptos, there are some letters that are out of alignment. And here on the untitled piece, these letters are not out of alignment. They're exactly lined up. You can see this part is the visionaire tableau, so we just have these diagonals, A, B, C, D. That's a clue to a decoding method for another part of Kryptos. Another thing is that, and this is something I discovered when I was visiting Bonnet's home, is that the untitled piece has these two dots. These two dots exist on the untitled piece and also on Antipodes at the Hirshhorn Museum. They don't exist on the Kryptos sculpture. So why one would have dots and the others don't? We don't know. All the other letters are identical except for the fact of being slightly out of order. That part of text, when it's decrypted, is the part that says, who knows the exact location, only WW. So that would be W dot W dot. So perhaps there it's a clue that there's initials there, or it could mean something else. We're not sure. If the dots were on Kryptos, they would probably be right around there. Okay. So also in part two of Kryptos, we have latitude and longitude coordinates, 38 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west. By the way, those coordinates 1 degree off are also repeated on the cover of the Da Vinci Code. And I've talked to Dan Brown, and I mean, he's definitely referring to Kryptos. He has two clues referring to Kryptos in the artwork of this book jacket. One of them is 37 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west. And the other is very faintly in the brown tear on the back of the book. It has the words, only WW knows. And usually Brown has done this with multiple of his books where he gives clues in the artwork of one book for the subject matter of the next book. Brown's next book is going to be out next week. It's called The Lost Symbol. And it's going to take place in Washington, D.C., and it's going to be about the secret society of the Freemasons. Kryptos may be in the book. He's given lots of clues that Kryptos might be in the book. Sanborn does not like that Brown may be using Kryptos in his book. Sanborn is especially unhappy because, and I've talked to Dan Brown on the phone. He called me up, and he was about to be on Good Morning America talking about Kryptos, and so he called me up to kind of check his facts on everything. And one of the things he asked me was, what does WW mean? And I said, well, we're not entirely sure, but we're pretty sure it means William Webster, the director of the CIA at the time that Kryptos was installed. And he's like, okay. Next morning, live TV, Good Morning America, I'm watching him, and they ask him, what does WW stand for? And I'm thinking, all right, he knows this. I prepped him, 12 hours ago, he knows. And he says, well, I think it's upside down, and it really means MM, and it stands for Mary Magdalene. So Sanborn hit the roof. He was furious that, first of all, Sanborn is pissed off because Brown never asked him for permission to use Kryptos in the artwork of the book jacket. Brown never gave credit to Sanborn, and Sanborn is especially upset that Brown is now reinterpreting the work of Kryptos to mean something other than what Sanborn intended. And Sanborn has been very vocal about this, and he actually went out public and said, no, WW means William Webster. He no longer was there any mystery about it. It doesn't mean Mary Magdalene. So I've talked to Sanborn about this, and Sanborn never wants Brown to mention Kryptos again. I personally think this is a bad idea, that it would be good for Kryptos to be mentioned in Brown's next book, even if it's wrong, because Brown gets lots of stuff wrong. But as a matter of fact, after The Lost Symbol comes out, there's going to be another book called Secrets of the Lost Symbol, which is going to be talking about the fact and fiction of the book, and I'm actually, I've been invited to be one of the contributors to that book, so I'm going to have a new book coming out in October. Yes, Scott?
Do you think that's a... I don't know.
Oh, 1 second.
So do you think that's a good strategy? We could leverage Dan Brown to get more secrets out of, for part four, out of Kryptos?
Can you publicly misinterpret stuff and piss off Sanborn enough?
It's definitely something to do. There's all kinds of social engineering that can be done. If Brown does go in his book and says, well, part four means blah, 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 it just might piss Sanborn off enough that he's going to say, no, what it means is blah, blah, blah. And then we'll have the answer. It's definitely a possibility. I hope that Brown mentions Kryptos in the book. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to reading the book. His books are they're exciting. They're fun page turners. If you're sitting at the beach, you want a book, it keeps you turning the pages, but you absolutely do not read them for anything to do with history or fact or geography or even whether a street is north, south, or east, west. He gets all that wrong, all of it. But if you just want a fun read, yeah, it's a fun read. Yeah, question.
Question for you. What's at those coordinates?
I'm glad you asked. I have another slide
before
here.
Before you advance, part four, is that the part that has the characters misaligned?
No, that's part three, and part three is the part that is a transposition cipher that comes out to be a paraphrased extract from the diary of Howard Carter on November 26, 1922, the day that he discovered King Tut's tomb. It starts slowly, desperately slowly, the remains of passage debris that encumbered the lower part of the door, or the upper part of the doorway was removed, and yeah.
Which part has the two dots then?
That's in part two. And I can definitely go into the details on that. I was thinking, I can talk for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours on just Kryptos. I'll definitely show it to you. But part two, it sounds like an intercepted radio transmission where they're saying things like, does Langley know about this? They should. It's buried out there. Who knows the exact location? Only WW. This was his last message. 38 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west. ID by Rose. Well, we thought it said ID by Rose. And then Sanborn said, no, he made a mistake on the sculpture. He'd taken out a letter. So when he took out the letter, when you're working with a Visioneer cipher, it should have just resulted in garbage text. But by sheer luck, it came out to something that looked like English, which was ID by Rose. And then when he came out and he said, nope, he screwed up, he'd taken out a letter for aesthetic reasons. When we put that letter back in, and he gave us clues, but we figured out, we put the letter back in, and we saw that it ends with the phrase X, layer 2. And Ed Scheidt sent me an email right after that announcement came out saying that and he started talking about duress ciphers. And duress cipher is something that when you're under duress, you can say something that might mean something different depending on, a good example is Star Trek. Captain Kirk's down there and he flips open the communicator and he says, condition green. And it sounds like everything's okay to the people around him, but the people on the Enterprise know that condition green means something's really, really wrong. That's an example of a duress cipher. And so Scheidt was talking about how this removing the letter, changing ID by Rose to layer 2, and he said this is sort of like a duress cipher. I'm not entirely sure exactly what he means on that, but it was interesting that he sent me an email within 24 hours to say that. So, and part one of Kryptos says, between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of illusion. It's misspelled as eclusion, I-Q-L-U-S-I-O-N. And there's also a spelling error in the part two where the word underground is misspelled. And I've asked Sanborn about those two typos. And I asked him if it was just a mistake when the sculpture was made. And he said, no, they were deliberate. But he says it's not what they are, it's where they are. It's their orientation or their positioning.
Yeah, there's also a mistake in the word desperately. It's desperately.
Right, right. In part three, where it says slowly, desperately, slowly, desperately is misspelled. However, when I've asked Sanborn about that, he's given me a different answer. When I asked him about that, and I said, was that just a spelling error? He said, it's possible. Anything's possible, which is his kind of standard thing for, being vague. But I think he just screwed up. I think he was just a bad speller on that one, because we found another piece, and I'll be showing you a slide of that, where he used the Howard Carter quote again, where desperately is correctly spelled. So I think that he caught it at that point. Okay, any other questions so far? Okay, so So the building here on the right was the original CIA headquarters building, and then they commissioned this new headquarters building. At one point, just a funny story, when I gave this talk in Washington, D.C. at ShmooCon a couple of years ago, and I used to call this the old headquarters building, and I was saying, okay, here's the old headquarters building, and here's the new headquarters building. And as I said, old headquarters building, way from the back of the room, from behind a pillar, so I couldn't see who said it, came this voice saying, we prefer original headquarters building. And I looked and I couldn't see who it was. We're like, okay. So I had someone from the agency, from the campus, from Langley there. I've run into other CIA agents from time to time, and some of them like being spooky, and some of them are just normal folks, but it's usually fun. Okay, so this is the original headquarters building, and this is the new headquarters building that was commissioned. So when this was commissioned, that's when they commissioned art to go around the building. This building with the funny-shaped roof in the middle, this is the cafeteria. There's a parking lot here, there's trucks and cars, so you can kind of get a sense of scale here. There's a courtyard here. Kryptos is right about here, and I'll show a better slide in a minute. Along the cafeteria, and you can't see it in this picture, but there's a line of windows down this side of the cafeteria, so that as the employees are eating, they can look through the windows and they can see out into this courtyard, which is where Kryptos is. Sanborn designed Kryptos. He designed some pieces here. He also designed some pieces here outside the front entrance of the new headquarters building. So here's a close-up. So again, we have the cafeteria. Where the windows are, this little squiggle right here, this is Kryptos. There's a duck pond here, and Sanborn says when he dug the duck pond, he filled it with water, and within like an hour, there were birds in it. I mean, it was that fast. And there's some granite slabs here, which again ties into his public art phase. And the granite slabs are in a line, which is pointing over here towards Kryptos. And then he designed three pieces out here, which are, again, granite slabs. There's one here, one here, and one here. And I'm going to give you a better view here. So, again, we have the slabs here with the duck pond pointing at the crypto sculpture. These little dots here are movable lunch tables, so that they don't mean anything. The front entrance, this is all a glass atrium here. And there's a, if you've ever seen a picture of the inside of CIA where they have like a small SR-71 hanging from the ceiling, this area is where that's hanging inside their atrium here. So Sanborn designed these pieces here, so we have granite slabs here, here, and here. And again, he did something new, which he hadn't done in any of his previous pieces, which is that he sandwiched sheets of copper in between these granite slabs, and he put Morse code messages on them. He said that he designed the parallel lines here. He said he did that deliberately, and he wanted it to look like a geologic force, like stone was coming up out of the ground. Again, we have a close-up here, so one, two, and there's a compass rose, and I'll show you a picture of that in a sec, and then another small, seemingly unmarked piece, the little triangle block there. And I'll show you about the latitude and longitude coordinates in a minute. So again, here's a close-up. These pictures are courtesy of Jim Galogli, who was the first person to publicly solve parts 1 through 3 in 1999. So again, you see they're kind of tilted up out of the ground with these sheets of copper. Morse code messages saying things like SOS, shadow forces, lucid memory, tease your position. Here's a lodestone sitting on top of one of the copper sheets. I've asked Sam, like, tease your position. I asked Sanborn if that was supposed to mean what is your position. Like, we were just seeing part of the message. I said, does the Morse code just keep on going all the way under the slab? And he said, yes. So how we would be able to see the rest of the messages, I don't know. Though it was interesting, I went out to dinner with him. We were having sushi, and we were talking about some of the Morse code. We were talking about the stories of when he was creating Kryptos, and you know, was there something buried out there? And he said, and he said, by the way, did you know that when we were out there installing cryptos, each night after we were done, the CIA would send out people with really powerful neutron scanners to scan everything that we'd done to make sure that we weren't, you know, installing something unusual. And I thought it was interesting that when I asked him about burying something, and then suddenly his mind switches to this thing about neutron scanners. So we've spent, there's people in the group that have spent some time trying to find out if there were reports from these scanners, where are the reports? You know, is there something that looks through the stone, and so we could see the rest of those Morse code messages? So we've been talking to, you know, trying to get contact with groundskeepers, and anyone at CIA, any kind of contact that we can possibly develop. Haven't had any luck yet. We even did a Freedom of Information Act request trying to get some of these documents, but we got a letter back saying a search for these documents produced nothing. And the person who did this request wrote to me and says, it's proof that they're hiding it. You know, they probably just tossed it. And here's, there are very few pictures of the compass rose, but this is one of them. And so, again, it's done in the same style as the two compass roses that Sanborn did in the Artery Plaza piece and the Invisible Forces piece. We've tried some things about, like, looking at a map of Washington, D.C. and seeing where all the compasses point to see if there's something triangulating, and haven't found anything. So it's possible that it's just there because it's a reflection of Sanborn's earlier work. It's possible that it means something else. The needle, the carved needle on the compass is pointing over here to a lodestone. So that ties in with Sanborn's earlier work. So latitude and longitude coordinates. The 6.5 seconds north, anyone here who's done geocaching knows that a tenth of a second of latitude is about 10 feet across. It's a relatively small area. We believe that the coordinates point to right around here, which is about 150 feet southeast of the crypto sculpture. Also, Sanborn, and he actually called me up recently to tell me this, that he's sure of the coordinates because there was a USGS Geologic Service benchmark at the time when they were installing, when they were creating the building, and he used that as his reference point to make sure that the latitude and longitude was correct. He got to revisit Kryptos a few months ago to kind of go check and see that everything was where it was supposed to be, and he said that the benchmark is gone. And he doesn't know what that means, but he wanted to mention that to me, that he couldn't find the benchmark anymore. He said also that one of the copper sheets between the slabs had gotten slightly out of alignment, and so he'd given them advice about just taking a sledgehammer and just kind of knocking it back into place. But everything else was sort of there. When I personally visited the GSA, the General Service Administration, I'm going through all the papers about everything, and I found the pamphlet that Sanborn had written for the CIA groundskeepers. And I was really excited to find it, to see if there was instructions there about, like, make sure to mow around the secret panel or something like that. And there wasn't anything like that. It was just about, like, how to take care of the pool and what kind of material to kind of use to clean the sculpture and stuff like that. Yeah, question.
Question for you. So the sculpture is somewhere, can you give me an idea again about where the sculpture is?
The sculpture is this little S squiggle right here. That's Kryptos.
And where are the coordinates?
Coordinates, we believe, point to right about here.
See, I used to write a little bit of software that did stereograms,
mm-hmm.
and we'd often use two dots for alignment.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody stood at that point and looked at the sculpture, has it ever been examined to see if it was a stereogram? Any portion of it?
We've had people talk about maybe you need to look at Kryptos from different locations, maybe we need to project light on it. It's a good idea.
You know what I mean by a stereogram?
Yeah, right, where you kind of unfocus your eyes and do stuff. It's possible. It's possible. I mean, come on, join anyone who wants to join our discussion group, come on in.
Well, I mean, I went to visit the sculpture, and I couldn't get in because it was after 9/11, they timed security, so I never get a chance to see it.
Well, I hear that there's, like, not a public day, but like a family day. So if there's anyone here who works at Langley that would like to vouch for me as their cousin, I would be happy to go in and kind of take some measurements.
That's my theory.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to stand at the location, look at Kryptos. I'd love to get some better measurements of it. We're trying to build a really good 3D model of it. I've had some people inside who've kind of helped with this, but they're kind of nervous that if they go in there and they're, like, measuring the sculpture, I mean, there's cameras all around this courtyard, and they don't want to get in trouble with their bosses. I mean, they work at CIA, and if they're acting suspiciously, it's going to show up on their report. So one guy I think it was, it might have been a girl, I don't remember, but one person wanted to find, I'd ask, what is the thickness of the plates of Kryptos? And he didn't want to go and, you know, measure it because it's suspicious activity. So what he did is he kind of went up and he was looking at it, and he had a gum wrapper, an aluminum gum wrapper, and he took it and he kind of pressed it around the edge of the sculpture to get the crease, and then he kind of put it in his pocket, and then he went back to his desk, took the gum wrapper and measured it so he could get us the exact width of the plates of the Kryptos sculpture, which I thought was a really clever way of doing it. Other things we want people to do out there, I mean, one of the reasons that Kryptos hasn't been solved is because there might be something on site that maybe we need to look at it from a certain location. And when I first talked to Scheidt, the first time I met Scheidt, and I was asking him, and he was a little bit more open about talking about Kryptos, and I asked him, you know, why he thought Part 4 hadn't been solved, and he said, well, you solved the first three parts, but without recovering the keys first. And I'm not entirely sure what he meant by that, but it's possible that when we solved parts 1 through 3, when I say we, Jim Gologly, computers, David Stein, they kind of solved it brute force and then figured out the keys after the fact. So the keys to part 1 are the words Kryptos and the word palimpsest. The keys to part 2 are the words Kryptos and the word abscissa. And we've never really found a really satisfactory way of saying, where is the word palimpsest? How was someone to know that the key was the word palimpsest? We've found some stuff in the Morse code that implies that if we manipulate in a certain way, that the word abscissa might be derived from some of the Morse code dots. In fact, some of those Morse code messages, they're messages that if you read the dots one way, you get the message. And then if you reverse the dots and just change the ordering, you can get the same message going back the other way. And then there's some messages just dot, dot, dot. So it's maybe extra dots, and people have been trying to insert the dots into different things with Morse code messages. So there's a lot of avenues that are being investigated. But even if someone came in and said, okay, Ilanka, part 4 is a combination, it's a visionary cryptographic system tied with transposition, similar to part 3, use a visionary, use a quagmire 3, and here are the keys, there's still like 4 or 5 different ways that it could be done. So just because I knew all the methods would not mean that I could just solve it like that. So we may have stumbled across the method for solving it and just haven't done it in the exact right way. So if you have an idea, come on in and try it. Don't assume that we've already figured it out. Okay, go ahead.
So the position of the coordinates and Kryptos and the duck pond sort of form a compass tip. Which direction do they point? Because you've sort of got the shaft going back there. I don't know, you mentioned it, some of his compass sculptures before. I was just wondering if that direction is important.
It's possible. I'd love to get an exact compass readings about which way the Morse lines point, which way the granite slabs point. Some people have done some work. Let me see. Yeah, okay. So this is showing some of the lines. And at the time this was made, I don't think this is accurate, but they kind of tried to overlay the compass and see. I don't think that compass needle is accurate. I think it's actually it's a few degrees off and needs to be pointing more towards the north, northeast. But it's obvious that there are some parallel lines there. The coordinates that are down here, it's possible that the coordinates are not what's important, but the coordinates, maybe we need to make a parallelogram. And maybe we need to look at something, you know, down here. Maybe Sanborn buried something there. There's also this little triangle block, which it's there. It doesn't have anything written. It doesn't have Morse code messages. Maybe that was something, maybe there's something under that, maybe that's what was needed to be found, we don't know.
I just meant something much simpler, like this natural line, mm-hmm. that the architecture has. Mm-hmm.
Did you say the Morse message forward and backwards, mm-hmm. was the same?
Some of them, yeah.
Isn't that a palindrome?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
could
it
that
is.
Be a keyword?
Well, it's possible that palindrome does tie into the word palimpsest. It's possible. Anything's possible.
Palimpsest is a piece of vellum that's been entirely written on and then entirely erased so it can be used again.
A palimpsest?
A palimpsest, yeah.
Yeah, a palimpsest is a word for a scroll that's had one message written on it, and then that message was scraped off, and then a second message was written on the scroll. So that when you're looking at it, a palimpsest means you're seeing the new message, but you're also seeing bits and pieces of the old message that are showing through.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, and palimpsest is used not just for writing and scrolls, it's also used for other things. So like the city of Rome is a palimpsest, because you can, standing on a street corner in Rome, you can see a new office building and a medieval church, and you're like a Roman Colosseum, and so you're seeing all of the time periods all showing through at the same time. That's yeah. palimpsest.
Also, that along with the word abscissa, which is like an axis on a graph.
X-coordinate on a graph, yeah.
And it might actually contribute to the plumbing there.
Possibly, yeah, possibly. And, you know, there's grids on cryptos, so maybe we need to get numbers and then tie in grids to find certain letters. There's lots of different avenues. Ed Scheit has said that part four, it is solvable, that it's going to be in English, that all the letters are going to be used, and that he used a little bit of stego, a little bit of steganography, concealment. He did things to mask the English. He said when we solved parts 1 through 3, we had the advantage of the English language and the known patterns of the English language to solve those 3 parts, and he said he removed that advantage for part 4. So what does that mean? Maybe he removed the vowels. Maybe it's in binary. And so let me go on here, and I'll go on with some of Sam Warren's other work. Let me see how much time we got going. I mean, I can easily talk about this for a long, long, long time. Okay, so this was made around the same time that Sanborn created Kryptos. And so we're back to gallery art here. And he did this whirlpool. So again, this is reflecting the pool that's at the base of Kryptos. So we have water moving in a circular direction. We also have this nautilus shell. So again, we have the spiral of the nautilus shell, and that nautilus shell was also used in other works of Sanborn. So he's repeating things. And so then he had this phase of his career for about the next 10 years or so where he was just doing tons and tons of sculptures with text. One of them was the Cyrillic projector. He created it in the early 1990s for his gallery shows. And then he sold it in 1997 to the University of North Carolina in Charlotte. So it's there. It's got these same sort of plates as Kryptos, but instead of the S shape, the two halves are put together, and we have a cylinder, light in the middle, beaming encrypted Russian text all around the courtyard. If you know the campus, it's between the Friday building and the Fretwell building there. And we cracked this one in 2003. It turned out to be extracts of classified KGB documents. How did Sanborn get classified KGB documents? Well, his father was the director of exhibitions at the Library of Congress. And in the late 1980s, early 1990s, as the Soviet Union was breaking up and there were KGB agents that were defecting to the United States, some of them were bringing with them suitcases full of classified KGB documents to kind of hand over. These documents were then given over to the Library of Congress. So that's where Sanborn was able to access some of these. And then he used some of these documents in another one of his pieces. So let me go on here. So a Cyrillic projector, after we solved it, it was noticed that the method of encryption on it was a visionary system, similar, but not the same type of encryption. There's many different types of visionary encryption, the polyalphabetic substitution. So it's similar to what's used on parts 1 and 2 on Kryptos, but using a different method. And it used 2 keys, so instead of like Kryptos and Palimpsest, it used the words tien, which I think is the Russian word for light. Does anyone here speak Russian that can verify that? Okay. And then the word medusa. And if you look here, as all this text that's being beamed around the courtyard, the word medusa in English, not in Russian, is right there as a clue to one of the keys of the sculpture. One of the ways it stands out is to those that know the Cyrillic alphabet, there is no D in Cyrillic. There is no S in Cyrillic. So this is what's called Latin text that's surrounded by the Cyrillic text. And you convert Medusa to the Cyrillic version, and that was one of the keys that took the Cyrillic projector apart. So where's that word Medusa coming from on the projector? And it's coming from the third line on this particular plate. And John Wilson, who normally comes to Dragon Con, he didn't come this year, but he noticed that there's an extra bolt right there on that third line. And it's kind of difficult to see here, but if you look from the inside of the sculpture there, it's very obvious that there's an extra bolt there. And it's the only bolt like that in the entire sculpture. So it's possible that Sanborn put it there as a clue to here's where the key is. So it's possible that he did something like that with Kryptos, that there's a clue, and maybe that ties into what Scheit was saying about we solved the first 3 parts without finding the keys first. Okay, so going more into the pulp documents, and again, this is after Kryptos was done in 1990, Sanborn had this pulp, and he made several sculptures with these stamped texts, and stamped text was some of it in Latin script, some was in Russian, some was in Arabic. And this particular one, and this was really hard to get this picture, this is hanging in a hallway of an office in the Federal Reserve Board. And it took a long time for me to get permission to get in there and take this picture, so enjoy it. I had some very irritated people. I had to pretty much go through my Congress critter to be able to get in there and take these pictures. This is a piece, a picture of a piece that's inside Sanborn's studio. I took the picture when I was there. I don't know if this one has been decrypted yet. There's several pieces, and different members of our group are working on different pieces. I don't know if they've looked at this one yet. This is something else. 1992. This is like, imagine a large screen like 6 feet across that's hanging on the wall. And all of that kind of green stuff in there is microtext. Hundreds and hundreds of words in Cyrillic, in Russian. And he did several pieces of these where he'd have this screen with all this text. So it's sort of like when he made Kryptos, he had this company which would make very, very small models where he could have this like flexible little copper screen with really tiny letters in it. And he decided to make several pieces of art with this screen with the really, really tiny letters in it. Someday we'd like to like get the stuff transcribed, find out what this text is, but as it's going to be a massive project. And going back to public art now, done in 1993, this is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration headquarters, commissioned Sanborn to do a piece in all this with the water out there called Coastline, and Sanborn did this, and it had wave generators, and I don't think it actually worked in the final implementation, but what it was supposed to do was it was supposed to communicate via modem with a sensor of the waves off the coast, east coast of the United States, so that as the waves were coming in there, the waves here were supposed to be identical to the waves that were actually coming in off the east coast. With the modems and stuff, it didn't work, but that was kind of the intent. So now it's just kind of a random wave generator. Very pretty piece. I went there to take a look at it when the wave generator was not on. And again, we're seeing these blocks of granite. This is sort of Sanborn style. And then he did a gallery installation, and I would love to get more pictures of these. It was in 1994, and the name of the exhibition was Decoding Filters. What a fascinating... I want pictures of every single piece in there. Because I'm thinking that Sanborn, once he'd done Kryptos, wasn't realizing it was going to be this huge public media frenzy. The media frenzy really didn't start until 1999. So it's possible... What? Jim Galogli. Jim Galogli, when he solved parts 1 through 3, and that made international media attention. And then after Galogli's announcement, that's when the CIA came forward and said, oh, well, we have someone inside the CIA, David Stein, who also saw those first three parts. And then the NSA, National Security Agency, came forward and said, well, we have people that have solved it too, but we're not going to tell you who, and we're not going to tell you when, which is, you know, very NSA. The NSA, National Security Agency, the joke in Washington, D.C. is that it really stands for no such agency. And it's a point of irritation with other agencies around D.C. that the NSA is always saying, oh, yeah, we already did that. We did that first, but we just couldn't announce it. And it's pretty irritating to other people when they announce something. So after all this, then the NSA, when I was visiting, I gave a talk at the NSA Cryptologic History Symposium. And while I was there, the people at the NSA Museum very kindly, because I didn't have time to go to the museum, but they kept the museum open late so that I could go and I could kind of go through their library and see some of the documents there. And while I was there, the librarian kind of came in and they kind of put a little piece of paper under my nose. And what it was an article from the Baltimore Sun talking about three people from the NSA that had cracked Kryptos in 1992. Now, this article was published, I think, in 2000. So it's sort of backdated. But I've tried to get in touch with the reporter who wrote it to ask him, how do you know that they did it in 1992? But if it's true, it means that from the people that I've talked to at the NSA, they said that after Kryptos had been on site for a couple of years, the director of the CIA was talking to the director of the NSA and says, okay, you guys think you're so hot, come crack our sculpture, come crack the code on Kryptos. And so the director of the NSA went out to the employees of the NSA and says, okay, let's put together a team. Let's go crack the code on Kryptos. And they put together a team of people, and they sicked all the computers of the NSA on Kryptos for a while in late 1992, and they solved the first three parts. They didn't solve the fourth part, and then a month later they sent a memo saying, here's what the first three parts say, and we weren't able to solve the fourth part. If something like this were to have happened in the field, where they had a small... this part four where they couldn't solve, they'd stamp it as requires more collection, meaning that we need to get other messages using this kind of encryption and then maybe be able to solve the code at that point. I think it's a plausible story that NSA did this in 1992, 1993. So, all right. So going into the decoding filters, Sanborn again did these things with projected light. So we have light coming from the top going through, and then we're getting these shadows around the bottom of the sculptures. So this is one where you have this plate with a hole in the center of the plate, So this is, the inclinar here is stamped through text. So light is coming through here and beaming, these are words in light saying inclinar, and then the light is coming through this hole, through this plate that has the word aqueous, and then we're getting light down here that says aqueous. And my Latin's not super strong, but I think inclinar means slanted, and aqueous means level or even. So that's kind of what this is meaning. And he did several other pieces like this. This one is using the Russian word svet, which I think means light. And so beaming through there. And then he did another one which is very similar to this, but with a different tear pattern, and this is the word tien. And tien was the key on the Cyrillic projector. So again, he's repeating the use of this term. Did you have a question?
If anybody's ever tried to go to a museum and actually take photos of exhibits, they really don't like that.
Right.
How did you get permission to take photos of all these?
I did not take these pictures, but I did visit. I've visited Sanborn multiple times, and he has allowed me to go through his files and pull out pictures of anything I didn't have pictures of yet. And then I would take them, and then I scanned them, and then I sent him the pictures back. But he doesn't even have pictures, or he says he doesn't have pictures of all of his work. And I took so many pictures while I was at his studio. I stayed at his house on his island, and he has his notes about cryptos, according to him, in a suitcase. And there were so many times that I was looking at that suitcase. You know, he and his girlfriend would be having dinner over here, and the suitcase was sitting over here by the wall, and I'm sitting there looking at the suitcase and thinking, you know, I could grab it, I could make it to the car, I don't think he could catch me, but didn't do it. But I thought about it. I did think about it. And I have pictures. I have pictures of the suitcase. If anyone wants to contact me later, I'll show you of the outside of the suitcase. And the suitcase may not even have the answer to part four in there. He may have just been messing with my head. But I remember spending a lot of time. He had the suitcase open, and he did have notes like his encryption tables for part three. So that information was definitely in the suitcase. This is another thing from the decoding filter show. Again, with light and shadow, and this is using the word ombra, which is Spanish for shadow, I believe, right? Right. So now we're going back to public art, and this is a building in the Washington, D.C. area, so it's called Indian Run Park. And again, he's really liking the cylinder format with the light beaming the text. In this case, the text that's being beamed is in a local Native American language. He also buried arrowheads. He had a collection of I think, hundreds or thousands of arrowheads that he buried in the area, thinking that as people go through this over the next several years, when there's rain and different things, that people are going to be finding arrowheads. He liked that idea of finding things. He did this for MIT, the Institute of Technology. And again, we have the petrified wood piece here. And this circle here is actually a screen, because there's a projector up here that's beaming slides of cells, and this is in the biology department at MIT. So again, we have the light projection phase and the petrified wood. So then he spent a couple of years just going out into the desert and beaming light on mountains. This is one of my favorite pieces. It's called Implied Geometries. It's at Notam, Utah. So none of this is computer graphics. This is all just elapsed time. So you can see he was beaming a square there, and we're only seeing it where the rock actually exists, and then we have the star trails here in the background. And he did dozens of pieces like this, beaming geometric shapes. This was off, the coast of Oregon. It looks like it was taken in day, but it wasn't. It was taken at night, and it was sort of foggy at the time, and he was beaming this circle of light, and so it was kind of reflecting off of the mist in the area. And he actually got in trouble with the local authorities because they were worried that he was disturbing the wildlife in the area, and they chased him away. He wasn't allowed to do a lot of pictures here. This is another one. I think this one is called Shiprock. And you can see the grid that's beamed onto it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay, so then other pieces, public art. The one on these two pieces look very similar. They're done in different states. The one on the left is Adam Smith's spinning top, and it's right next to the Cyrillic projector at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. And the text, so it looks like text that's being spun out as this top goes along, and it's about Adam Smith, who's an economist that talked about how the economy is like a spinning top. It needs to have a certain amount of momentum to be going along. And then he did this other piece on the right, which is very similar but with a different cone, but same thing, a top that's moving, leaving Adam Smith text behind it. This one on the right is in Cleveland. Okay. Then this one he did for the Internal Revenue Service. It's called Binary Systems. A huge lodestone, huge lodestone. And they actually had to put this thing saying magnetic around it because if people went close to it, it was messing with credit cards and other magnetic strips. So we have text going into it from the left-hand side, and these are names of presidents, and then I think secretaries of the Treasury, but I'm not certain. And then coming out, it's binary, and then the names in binary coming out on the other side. So it's sort of representing like a magnetic tape as names go through and come out as ones and zeros. There's also two other pieces here, and I'll have some close-ups of here. We have a circular bench back here, and then we have some paving over here which has ones and zeros in it, and it comes out to be ASCII at 7-bit binary. So that's the bench that's in the back. And then over here where someone's walking, we have ones and zeros. This is the maquette that he made. And I have pictures of some of these where he sort of designed what he wanted things to look like. I also have, and I couldn't really show it here because I have a video and it's difficult to get it into PowerPoint, but I have the video showing the maquette of what he made when he was working on Kryptos and sort of how he was envisioning Kryptos to be set up. Anyone who's interested in that, just join the group, and I've got links to all this under password on my website. The username is Kryptos and the password is Eclusion. So you can remember that. And this is the ones and zeros. Though it's interesting, this picture came from Sanborn's file, and the picture's backwards. The ones and zeros are backwards. I don't know if he did that deliberately. There's also a picture of Kryptos in his files where it's backwards, especially you're seeing letters by the reflecting pool, and he turned it reverse so that the letters weren't backwards. The letters were right way around. But I don't... That might have something to do with his thought process, or maybe it was just a mistake. It's hard to tell.
Maybe it's
Ott. This is Stamford, Connecticut. Again, we have text, and there's this binary section. I don't think we've translated the binary section. The text is from documents, I think, in the 1700s, talking about meeting up with the Indians at that time, so the links between the Christians and the Indians. This is what he was working on for a few years, late 1990s, early 2000. He was rebuilding the lab that was designed to the Manhattan Project lab. And you know, what they were doing, how, so you would walk into, it was a gallery installation, and you'd walk in and you'd hear the tick, tick, tick of the Geiger counters, and it was all kind of eerie and spooky. And this was shown at the Corcoran Gallery, which was next door to the White House. In 2001, he did this thing called Circulating Capital. This is at in Connecticut, I think Connecticut State University. And the binary code in the lower half, text in the upper half, again, a quote from Adam Smith. He really likes doing quotes from Adam Smith. So someone had a question the other day about if Sanborn might have used a book code. And I said, if he did use a book code, it's probably against something by Adam Smith, because he just loves doing stuff about Adam Smith. Also in 2001, the Caloosahatchee manuscripts. This is in southern Florida. And this is, again, we have the two cylinders and we have the text. This is in Indian languages, and it's the terms are local wildlife and local plants, the Native American terms for these. 2002, this is at the new Washington, D.C. Convention Center. So if any of you have been there, you may have walked by these. So we have two cylinders. We have one cylinder here, and then we have the second cylinder here. Each cylinder is a set of four rings, so we have a total of eight different languages that are represented there. Greek, Latin, Chinese, Assyrian, and each one that we've been able to transcribe and translate has to do with a text from that language about a gathering, a meeting, you know, Native American chiefs visiting or something to do with meeting, which makes sense because it's at the convention center, lingua, languages. This is also of lingua, so you can see the text that's being beamed onto the pillar there on the right. Also in 2002, he designed the interior of the Zola Spy Restaurant. This is the restaurant next door to the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. So on the left here, behind the waiter, you can see one of the pulped pieces. Sanborn had a large pulp piece with encrypted text on it. He cut it in half, put one half on one side of the restaurant, another half on the other side of the restaurant. Our team has looked at it, and they've transcribed it, and there's some extra letters and stuff, but they've come out with it, and the decrypted text is again the Howard Carter quote, but with the word desperately correctly spelled instead of misspelled. And there's a couple other small wording changes in it. This is a close-up of one of the pictures. These things are really hard to take pictures of because it's a very subtle texture that we're getting. This is, we had dinner at Zola, so on the right here in the back, the elderly man, that's Ed Scheit, who was the man who taught Sanborn about codes. That's his son sitting on the left next to me. The other man sitting at the table here is Frank Kaur, and he's the guy who really figured out the Cyrillic projector. We transcribed it, we put it on the web, and he's the one that kind of took it apart and gave hints. And then we took the ball and ran with it from there, and we're actually able to complete the encryption after that. So it was really a team effort. One person did one thing, and just different steps all the way along. And so this is another piece. I don't know if you can see it in this slide, but along the right-hand side here, there's a lot of doubled letters, double S, double O, S is here, and E's. Those letters are not part of the code. We actually had to remove those in order to figure out what the decrypted text said, but he'd added these letters in order to kind of pad things out. There's an extra letter on the crypto sculpture as well. There's an extra L in the Visionaire tableau. Don't know why it's there. Don't know if it's a clue. Don't know if it's just he needed an extra letter to pad out the line. Hard to tell. Yeah. Also at the Zola Spy restaurant, we had the classified document wall, where there are these documents hanging in sheet protectors, dozens of documents, and they're in English, Russian, and French. Some classified documents there, some stuff that's redacted, and these came from Sanborn's private collection. One of these documents is the source document to the decrypted text of the Cyrillic projector. So after we'd solved the Cyrillic projector, we saw that, hey, look, there's the solution to it. It's hanging on this wall. So if he did that with the projector, it's possible that the answer to Kryptos is hanging on this wall as well. So we're trying to transcribe it, get a lot of information here.
The pieces is already hanging up in the Zola Spy restaurant, right? The Howard Carter piece.
Yes, yep. So there's references to Kryptos all through this restaurant. When you walk in, when you go up the stairs, there's a projector beaming light down onto the stairway that has the crypto cipher alphabet as you're going up. Also behind here, behind these walls, there's a stairway going up, and beamed on the wall next to the stairway, you can see there's some binary code that's beamed there. And we've taken a look at this as well, and I believe this is also another Adam Smith quote that's coming up. So again, he's just fascinated with Adam Smith. Another part of the restaurant, around the bar, he has these metal plates with letters carved in them, not encrypted. This is just straight Russian text. There's about four or five different texts, and they're arranged in different ways. They are from covert messages during the Cold War, talking about how someone was going to use something called a dead drop. Dead drop meaning someone's going to leave like a canister of film on a bench in a church somewhere, and then they're going to walk away, and 10 minutes away someone else is going to sit on that bench, pick up the film, and go along. So these are describing, I found this spot, it's in this church, it's out of the way, I placed something there, came back 15 minutes later and it hadn't been moved. I think we can use this spot. So we have these transcribed, and we have translations of these for the Kryptos researchers if anyone wants to know more about what these say. This another public piece. It's different languages. We haven't transcribed this one. I think this one's in Iowa. And this is what Sanborn is working on now. He's building a particle accelerator in his backyard. And he got his hands on radioactive material from somewhere. He got some beryllium. I mean, this is lethal stuff. But he managed to get some, and it's working. This is the picture from the Washington Post a couple weeks ago. We talked about this thing is generating X-rays, and I asked that when I saw this thing, and I asked Sanborn, I said, do you have a permit to create a particle accelerator? He said, I don't even have a permit to pour the concrete that the thing is sitting on. And I said, well, have you told your neighbors that you're building a generating radioactivity? He said, no, it's none of their business. I'm like, well, if one of your neighbors were doing something that was generating radioactivity, would you want to know? And he said, don't go there. So I've now one thing, this when the article came out in the Washington Post about the X-rays and everything, I have not heard from Sanborn since that article came out. I hope he's okay. But his plan is to continue working on this, and then he's going to be putting it in a truck and transporting it across state lines next year and taking it to Denver. I don't know if he's going to be driving it through the metro DC area, but
hopefully his place hasn't been turned into a Superfund site.
Oh my God. I Yeah, I don't think this is one of the wisest things he's done, but he's got tunnel vision. He wants to do this. This is what he's been spending years working on, and he cannot be dissuaded.
So long as he works with the proper chance.
Yeah. So, all right. So, summary. Sanborn has tons of pieces around the world. Some are encrypted, or many are in other languages. If anyone wants to come in and help and verify our transcripts, especially for the odd scripts such as Assyrian and Chinese, Ethiopian, we'd love to have you come in. Some have sections in binary. It tends to be 7-bit ASCII binary. Then there's these covert operations fragments that are made from pulped documents. And then there's other curiosities. He uses multiple this Adam Smith. He just loves using quotes from Adam Smith. He's had these three sculptures that have used these engraved compasses, and then this one hidden under the three events. He was finishing this while he was, you know, putting in the bid for Kryptos. Could any of this be related? We don't know. Lots of mysteries, lots of interesting things to discuss. So the themes of his career, he started working with rock and sandstone, magnetism, invisible forces, then encryption, which is hidden messages, invisible messages, projected light. He's fascinated by things that project light in on mountains or through text. And now he's working on another invisible force, the secrets of the atom. And he repeats things. So one of the things that I find intriguing is that of the encryption methods that are used on Kryptos, He has created other sculptures that use all of the same methods on Kryptos. He hasn't introduced any new methods except for binary. Binary is the one thing that we haven't found on Kryptos yet that he has used on other sculptures. So maybe binary has something to do with part four that we just haven't figured out yet, and that's why he's continuing to repeat to use it. And another thing to think about Sanborn is that he does have this distinguish between his public art and his gallery installations. You know, the public art financing the work that he's doing on the gallery installation. The particle accelerator is considered to be a gallery work. If anyone wants more pictures, I've been working over the last couple weeks to create a complete gallery on my website with all of these images. I have over 1,000 images there so far, so it's ilanka.com/kryptos/gallery. I have a little bit of information about Kryptos in my book here, Secret Codes and Cryptograms, and if Dan Brown mentions Kryptos in his next book, I will be having another article about Kryptos, which will be appearing in a new book coming out in October, but we won't know until we see Brown's book next week. So, any questions?
Does Sanford does he speak Russian? Does he have Russian background, or is it all just Cold War?
To my knowledge, Sanborn does not speak Russian at all. He's definitely traveled through Asia. His girlfriend is Korean, so he may speak some Korean. I'm not sure. The text that he's done, for example, the Ethiopian text, I know that he did that because one of his favorite coffee shops has restaurants from Ethiopia, and so he contacted them about writing something that he could put into one of his sculptures. I think the Russian text, he tends to just transcribe from Russian documents. The Cyrillic projector had a lot of typos in it, a lot of mistakes, and some of the mistakes were the kinds of things that someone not familiar with Cyrillic would have done. For example, there's this character called the Sh character and the Shuchu character, and the only difference is I see somebody rolling their eyes in the back. It's this tiny little tail after it, or there's the E and the I, which is like a backwards N, and one has a little squiggle over it. And I can say from experience, because I was one of the people that transcribed the Cyrillic projector, which was a pain in the ass, because I had photographs of a cylindrical sculpture with Russian text backwards, and I couldn't even see all of it at one time, so I just had all these pictures surrounding me on the floor, and there were two other people that made transcripts, and we didn't know that each was making a transcript, but that was good, because then we had three independent transcripts that we could compare to make sure that we had a really accurate transcript. But yeah, Russian's really difficult to work with, and I don't think Sanborn knows it.
For those who... how many people here are actually into cryptography? That's a couple. I did cryptography for the military. This book, if you're not into, even if you are into cryptography, this book is really cool. I got one of these and took it home. And in looking through it, what's really cool about it is it gets you into cryptography very easily and shows you all the mechanisms of how it works and gives you puzzles to actually solve at each section. It doesn't leave you completely hanging so that it's not like a math book where all the odd ones don't have the answers.
I hate those.
And everything you need to solve the puzzle is in the book.
I wrote it in an airplane fashion, right? So if you're on a plane and you have the book, it doesn't say, okay, get a dictionary, and you don't have a dictionary. No, everything you need, all the charts, everything's in the book.
And how many have seen Army of Darkness?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you know the scene where he opens up that book and it's like a vacuum cleaner starts sucking him in? This book is really, really cool. Aww. So I highly recommend you get, I've spoken as a cryptologist, I highly recommend this book. It's just really cool.
Thank you. That's very, very kind of, aww.
It has taken up many hours, days, weeks of my life.
Have you found any of the meta puzzle clues in the book?
I've found some of the clues. Okay. I've not tackled the meta puzzle yet.
Okay.
I've been working through the book from start to finish, and I'm going to get the meta puzzle last.
Okay.
Well, this is really kind of funny that you mentioned the meta puzzle. I got this at the other day?
The meta puzzle, by the way, is I have puzzles hidden inside the puzzles.
Yes,
there's a treasure hunt with prizes for the first solvers.
And it said in the front there's puzzles hidden in the puzzles and there's other clues for a meta puzzle. I went, oh, great. Just okay, so I'm in the library, the porcelain library at home. Now, this is like 2 days ago, yesterday. It was right after I bought the book. And before I came to the con that day, and I'm reading it, and all of a sudden my wife hears me burst out laughing. I found one of the meta puzzles inadvertently on one of the pages, and as soon as I found it, I immediately started leafing through the book, going, "Oh my goodness, they're everywhere!" When you find one, you're going to freak out because you're like, "How did I miss this?" I suspect that Sanborn's got something like that where it's just right there right in front of you, and we don't realize.
He said that. He said that there's a clue in plain sight that we haven't found yet. But again, yeah. So if anyone would like a book, I'm selling them for $20. I do have my autograph pen here. And also, this is, as I've been saying, a special collector's edition of my book. This is the sixth printing, and it was a new publisher, and they on the copyright page, they misspelled my name. So it's Ilanka Duncan on the copyright page. So I'm billing this as like a collector's edition, like that postage stamp with the upside-down airplane. So get them while they're still here, because there will be a seventh printing with the correct spelling of my name.
Yeah. It's kind of odd that Kryptos is at the CIA headquarters, but it's really NSA that makes codes, and the CIA don't particularly do that very much. They're more in skullduggery and spookery and so on.
Right, and I talked to Ed Scheid about that, about how he could be the head of the CIA Cryptographic Center when it's really the NSA, the National Security Agency, which is in charge of cracking codes. And he says, well, different agencies have different missions, and there was something in one of the CIA's missions that did involve cryptography, and that was the Cryptographic Center that he was involved with.
I really expect there to be some kind of hidden meta-message after you've got the text, which should be trivial. There should be some deeper meaning about the coordinates or the positions or the alignment. There should be something hidden at that level which CIA spooks would be able to find.
Sanborn has said Kryptos was designed with Kryptos is Greek for hidden, the idea of information gathering. That was the theme of it.
If I can say one thing about breaking codes, it's actually easy to break codes in any language. You don't have to be able to speak the language the code is in. It's actually quite easy to distinguish.
Depending on the type of cipher, yeah. I mean, it depends. If something was like a Visionaire cipher or a Playfair cipher in another language, it gets really hard to crack.
Yeah, but if you get near the answer, then that language is distinct from random text, is easy to spot. So
it would be quite possible to work in Russian, for example. If you have the frequency analyses, yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Sure.
You mentioned various private collections. People have his work in various private collections. And of the ones that you've seen, have you discovered any encrypted messages that the owner of the adapter piece did not necessarily know was in sculpture?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, especially when I visited David Bonnet's home. He just bought the untitled Kryptos piece because he thought it was interesting looking. It looked, you know, it was something coded. He didn't know that it had the same text as was on Kryptos. He didn't know the dots were there. He didn't know what the Russian text said. He didn't know any of that. So he thinks it's really cool that he has this piece that everyone's kind of slavering over may have given us a key with these extra dots and the different order of things. I mean, I'd seen Antipodes at the Hirshhorn Museum, but it was something about the untitled Kryptos piece, the smaller one, that I just got down and looked at it and saw the dots, and that, you know, whereas the dots are there on the Hirshhorn one.
Is the untitled one to scale with the full size one?
The untitled one is exactly 20%. It's identical, but 20% smaller than the Antipodes sculpture, which is at the Hirshhorn.
So is it possible that the, like with this really projector, you saw that the extra bolt was there next to Medusa. Is it possible that he would have left a clue in the smaller one similar to that?
Is it possible, repeating the question, is it possible that he left a clue in the smaller one, which is similar to the extra bolt in the Cyrillic projector? It's possible. Anything's possible. I don't know. Join our group. Come, take a look. Any other questions? Okay. All right. Thank you for coming. Thank you, especially at this hour. Enjoy your last day of DragonCon.